Even the lightest weight among them, in other words, the one who, to consider, you know, from the point of view of character and deeds and everything else, you know, is really just about barely tipping the scales, right? But for Nismano Panas of a Tzibur, but he has been nominated, he has been named to become a leader of the people. Harehu Ka'avi Shababim. He is just like the strongest of the strong. Okay, the mightiest of the mightiest. Okay. I don't have to tell you, I mean, that this presents difficulties. Because can we really equate, you know, some of these people? Can we really say, and you know, the expression, Yiftok Bedoro Kishmu Bedoro, you know, the last statement over here. Can we really say that that is so? But nevertheless, what it is stating is the fact that Yiftach and his generation was the leader that the Jewish people needed in order to be able to free themselves from the subjugation. Samson and his generation. He was no great sheikh as a moral character, as we all know, reading, you know, right, the story of Samson. But nevertheless, he was a one-man fighting machine when he came to try to fight for the freedom of the Jews against the Philistines and so on. So we have to say that if a person, as a leader of the Jewish people, fulfills a function of Taker being a leader and working on their behalf and so on, then we have to accord him the respect that is due unto him. Doesn't really mean that he has exactly the same moral standing or that he has the same record of accomplishment or anything else, but it's important, you know, to emphasize that a person at a particular time has a certain role to play that, you know, in another generation he would not have had.
It's no question about it. Doing God's work, in other words.
Yeah, in this particular case. Pardon me?
Noah.
Yeah. Yeah, right. He was righteous in his generation. And of course, you know, if you take it, then you know, the Gnai, as we say,
right.
And then it means that had he lived in the time of Abraham Avinu, he would have been a nothing. Okay.
Well, does it imply that by electing him to your leader, that essentially you're giving him the Ruach HaKodesh?
It may be. I mean, these people who in the Bible, they did have a certain amount of Ruach HaKodesh about to be leaders. No question. Gidon certainly had. Shimshon also, to a certain extent, had. And even Yiftach in his war, right.
He did give that quality to these people, right?
Right, absolutely. And, you know, the question is, did that quality ever remain with those 70 people? That again is a question, because it's written by Yisnabu, they prophesied Velo Yosofu, and the question is, what does Velo Yosofu mean? One interpretation is, and they continued to prophesy, but the other one is that they prophesied and they did not continue anymore. In other words, it was just a temporary thing and that's it, you know. So that's a question of how you interpret those two words, Velo Yosofu. Okay, alright, so at any rate, getting back over here, all right, so we see that, you know, we're trying to assert the fact that each of them did have an important role to play in his own generation. The Omer, and then they quote another pasuk over here. It's written in Chumash Devarim, it's written, Uvoso el hakohanim halviyim el hashofet asheyeh bayomim ohem. All right, it's written, and you shall come to the priests, the Levites, right? And to the judge, El HaShofet, right, who will be by Yomim Ohim in those days. So the Gemara says, V'chisale al datcha, can you imagine she'odom holeich etzel hadayin shem hoyo b'yomot, that a person is going to go to a judge who was not in his own generation? Right? Not in his own days? Right? So, he can only go to a judge who is living in your time, right? So, the Omer in another pasuk says, Al Tomar, do not say, Mehaya, you know, what has happened, Shahayonim Harishonim Hayutovim Me'elim. The earlier days were better than these days. In other words, you don't work on the theory that only the past was good and the present is no good. So you have to be judged, right? You have to go on the basis of who is your leader right now, and if he's working on your behalf, then in that particular case, then he's the one, you know, that you should follow. Okay. Of course, in all honesty, you know, today I have a great deal of difficulty because of the proliferation of splits within the Jewish community, and each one claims that his Beis Din is the right Beis Din. Now, I'm not talking about Orthodox Beis Dins, although the Lord knows that you have many of them, and of course there are differences of opinion over there, and some of them have the tendency, you know, to poo-poo, you know, the scholarship, and the results, you know, how the other Beis Dins and so on. That's one problem. But what do you do, for example, with a Reform Beis Din? They claim they have halacha.
They have a Beis Din.
Yeah, they have. They have. They have a Beis Din. Don't ask me who comes over there, but you know there is a group within the Reform movement. But, you know, it's, let's say in Cincinnati, in the Reform Seminary, where you have a couple of professors who are asked questions. What should be our procedure? How should we act, or something like that? So there are books that have been written on Reform halacha. Of course, the business that you know they publish it. They always have a disclaimer over there. The disclaimer is that none of this is binding. None of it is binding. You do what you want. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But they really, right. They right. do not have what you would call halacha.
Right. But well, nevertheless, I'm telling you, you know, that they do have what they call Reform halacha.
There's
they do. Because, you know,
guidelines.
Right. Guidelines. Right. But as I say, and then they come along and they say, you know, but nobody is bound by it. Okay. Because there are a few people in the Reform movement who, you know, have a little bit more of an inclination towards. Let's say, I wouldn't say Orthodox, but at least it's more traditional observance, okay?
The same thing holds for conservatives.
Yeah, that's another. Now, conservative, okay, I'll tell you what's going on in the conservative movement. In the conservative movement, they've had for years a Beis Din. Once upon a time, when I was a student at the seminary, the Beis Din was composed of people who were Baalei Halacha. And they did, you know, the psak that they gave was based on halacha. According to the questions in those days, they said that the organ was wrong. It was wrong to use an organ of services. Okay. They were those who still believed that you should have separate seating, not mixed seating, and things like that. This is the way they postured in those days. And they, you know, they had people who knew what it was all about. Okay.
Louis Ginsburg
was one. You had Boaz Cohen, is another one. Yeah, Boaz Cohen. He's a great type of prophet. Right. Yeah.
Abe Heller.
Yeah, you know, slightly. Yeah. Yeah, right. In Brooklyn, right. In Brooklyn in general, those big conservative congregations like his and the Brooklyn Jewish Center and the Ocean Parkway Jewish Center and so on, right, yeah. They, you know, they were much more traditional in their attitude. They aren't today. I mean, many of them don't exist anymore, right. Yeah. But as you can see, it underwent a complete sea change, so to speak, from those days to what you have today, where they have committees that vote, and then you have a majority opinion, and you have a minority opinion, and they say, and you, Mr. Morada Asra, very nice to be called the Morada Asra, in other words, every rabbi in his own individual congregation is the authority to decide if he wants to do this, or he wants to do that, or something like that.
He's his own
Beis Din. Right. Okay.
His
own so, you know, you can't compare that to what the situation is that they described, because they were working on the assumption that a Beis Din, no matter in what generation, but still there would be certain guiding principles that they would adhere to, you know, in making decisions. Sure, there are differences of opinion. You know, you have to judge every case on its own individual merits, and therefore, even a decision that may be true now, you know, maybe in a different circumstances would not be correct. But you still have the guidelines to which you submit. You still have the Shulchan Aruch, you know, which you want to follow. And of course, you know, the Shulchan Aruch with its commentaries and Shabbos and Shuvos and things like that. You know, I'm only using the Shulchan Aruch as an example, because you have thousands of works that have been printed, you know, since the time of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. But at least they have, you know, something that they want to go on the basis of.
Well,
yeah.
I had a question, if you don't mind expanding on it. I guess it would be what you call like the structure of
Right. Tzatziki.
My impression in the United States is that there are many, many what I would call local tzatzikin.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there one that has, like a national one that has, in a formal sense, one that has... Not in a moral sense, but in a formal sense, has a authority over the others. And it might also, the corollary to that is in Israel, I know from when I studied that what the Tzaddikim had to do with marriage and divorce.
Right.
That they actually had an appellate one. They had the, there is a, you might call it a, and they will supervise.
Yeah.
Those decisions.
Yeah.
So that's only with marriage and divorce, not all the hundreds of other questions.
Right.
Please expand on that.
All right. Won't expand too much. I'll try to contract a little.
Okay.
In the United States, it's pretty much hefter. Okay.
Hefter.
It's pretty much hefter. You know what I mean by hefter. Hefter means it's free for all. Okay. Hefter means free for all. Okay. But nevertheless, you have, first of all, ad hoc business, okay? For example, if we have to convey a divorce, a get, to somebody over here, so, you know, Rabbi Sonnenschein and I and somebody else will get together and we'll be an ad hoc business, you know, in order to convey that. Okay. But, in turn, Rabbi Sonnenschein is not writing a get for somebody. Who writes gets? The answer is that you have in Boston, you have a Beis Din which is recognized within the New England area.
Okay.
And of course, it's part of the you know, the VH. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that Rabbi Hauptfinger, you know, is the rabbi who's in charge of that. Okay. The various yeshivas and rabbinic organizations also have Beis Dins to which very often people come and refer weightier matters. Yeshiva University, you know, has a Beis Din. Okay? It would be, of course, the Rabbinical Council of America Beis Din. You would find a Beis Din, for example, there are several Orthodox rabbinic organizations, I don't know if you're aware of it, and they're not all members of the Rabbinical Council. You have the Igud HaRabbonim, and you have Hishtachdus HaRabbonim. Igud HaRabbonim, these are rabbis who, for the most part, they're not from YU or Chicago or anything like that, but you know, they're from the older yeshivas like Torah Vadas, Chofetz Chaim, and things like that, and so on, okay? Yeah, so they have a Beis Din that, you know, that they also adjudicate matters of divorce and things of that nature, okay? And the Hishtachdus HaRabbonim, which happen to be primarily Hasidic Rebbeim, to get together, they also have their own Beis Din and so on, okay? And then, of course, in Eretz Yisrael, you have very great, you know, authorities who are recognized. As, for example, the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, okay? He passed away recently, but there are still others, you know, considered, you know, poskim. So that you have important shilas, you know, that require real research or something like that. So they would refer to these authorities, okay? And of course, in America, it was like, we had the Rav Moshe Feinstein. We had that, okay?
But these are poskim. Yeah. They're not necessarily a Beis Din. They don't give their authorities as part decisions as part of a Beis Din.
No, but they're decisions could influence, however, the decision of the president. Right, exactly. I mean, certainly a lot of people, you know, deferred to the authority, the scholarship of Bishop Eichstein, in order to decide what the halacha should be. Rabbi Halbfinger probably has several rabbis that he could call upon, but as a normal rule, he'll select, let's say, three to serve as a bezdin for the issuance of a get, for example. Okay. Now, back in the old days, I used to work together with Rav Shenkov on the Rishalom, and he used Moses, right? He used to give, you know, get over here, we'd get the sofer over here, and we would have a bezdin. I would serve Ezra Bayaski on the Rishalom, would be a member of that group. So, you know, there were people back in those days, okay? But in more modern times, nobody is giving a get over here in Springfield. Instead, they refer to Boston. Right? Yeah. So, you have that, okay? All right, let's finish chapter right now. You're very welcome. Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. So, the last part of the Gemara that we have tonight is based again on the Mishnah, all right? What happened to Rabbi Hoshua? So if you remember, let's review first of all what the Mishnah has to say, okay? Mishnah says that, all right, Notal Baklo, Amar Salbiyodo, so he took his staff and his money in his hand. The Holach LeYavden, he walked to Yavden, he went to Yavden. Eitz to Rabban Gamliel. To Rabban Gamliel, the Yom Shechol Yom HaKippurim Niyos V'cheshbono. This was the day upon which, according to his calculation, it should have been Yom Kippur. And the Mishnah concluded by saying, Omed Rabban Gamliel V'shakal Rosho. So Rabban Gamliel stood up and he kissed him on his head, kissed him on his forehead, obviously. Omalo, he said to him, Bo v'shalom, come in peace, Rabbi v'talmidi, you who are my master and my disciple, my teacher and my disciple. Rabbi b'chokma, in wisdom you are my master, you are my teacher, v'talmidi, and you are also at the same time my talmid, my disciple, Shekib Baltu is the Gorai, and that you have accepted what I had to say. All right. So the Gemara concludes by saying, "Tana Rabbanu." We have a teaching that says, "Kevan Shiroa Oso." The minute that Rabbi Gamliel saw him, right, Omad Mikiso. So he got up from the seat upon which he was sitting, and he shook on Rosho, and he kissed him, and Omalo, and he said to him, "Shalom Alecha, Rabbi Talmidi." Right, peace unto you, my master, my disciple. Rabbi Sheni Madik Talmi Torah Rabbi, you are my master, my teacher, in that you taught me Torah among the multitudes. In other words, he was a teacher of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel learned a great deal of Torah from Rabbi Hoshua. But Talmidi, and you're also at the same time my disciple, Shani Gozer Alecha Gezerah, that I make a decree upon you, I give you a decree that you have to obey, the Atam Bekayamor Ketalmid, and you fulfill it even as a disciple has to fulfill what his teacher asks of him, right? Ashrei Hador, fortunate is the generation, Shahagadolim Nishmoyim Naktanim, that those who are great listen to those who are lesser, right? Okay, called the chomer, and all the more so, kitanim legolim, that the you know, those who are lesser authority pay attention, you know, and they listen to what the greater ones have to say. So the Gemara says, called the chomer. What do you mean, called the chomer? Called the chomer, you know, means all the more so. All right, all the more so. What's he all the more so? Chiyuvahu. What do you mean? It's an obligation. Somebody who is lesser in authority, somebody who is younger, whatever it may be, has to listen to those who are older, more experienced, etc., who have greater authority than him. So, Elo, but says the Gemara, "Mitov shehagedolim nishmoyim laktanim," because the those who are greater in authority listen to those who are smaller in authority, then those who are in lesser authority, they already, you know, can figure out, they can figure out logically that by all means that they themselves have to show the same respect towards one another, even as they have to show respect for their, of course, when they see that the, those who are older, more experienced, are still aware, are willing to listen to them. So it means all the more reason that they have to listen not only to those who are older, but maybe they also have to listen to their contemporaries as well and see what kind of wisdom they have to derive from them. Yes.
Did Gamliel was the elder of the two, or was Yehoshua the elder?
Probably Yehoshua was older than Rabbi
Gamliel. Yehoshua was older.
Right, right.
Of course, Gamliel had been
a student. Right. Rabbi Yehoshua was a disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai.
Yeah. Okay,
then
so
Rabbi Gamliel came after.
So
right.
He's
the next generation.
So I understand even more
right.
So what's going on here.
Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay, so with this, Hadron Olecha, we say, may we come back again and learn you in Meinon Makirin, which is the second chapter in Rosh Hashanah. And Yitzh Hashem, next week we shall start the brand new chapter in Meinon Makirin. Reuhu Bezdin. And here we actually go back again into the laws of Rosh Hashanah. Particularly, this coming chapter is going to be dealing primarily with the laws of shofar blowing, and things like that. Tonight is the 12th of July, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, and we are now about ready to begin Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chaf Hei Amud Beis, a new chapter beginning with the words Baruch Besdin. Okay, this particular Mishnah happened to be quoted before because this sort of concludes the general arguments as to how the Besdin has to proclaim Rosh Chodesh. So the Mishnah begins, and then we'll see how the Gemara is going to analyze each and every phrase over here, because the question is, what does each phrase in the Mishnah teach? So the Mishnah starts out by saying, Rauhu Bezdin v'chol Yisrael. Okay. The Bezdin and everybody else has seen the new moon. Obviously, seen the new moon when? At the night of the 29th. Okay. That's when they saw it. Okay. Nechkeru ha'edim, and not only that, but the witnesses have also been questioned, and of course, they gave their testimony, and the Besdin was about ready to pronounce the fact that it was Rosh Chodesh, but v'lo hispiku lomar mekudosh, but the Besdin didn't have a chance to say that the month is sanctified, asha chashecha, because in the meantime, it was already night, it was already dark. So in that particular case, what is the din? The answer is Harezem Uba. In that particular case, we say that the month is not, that Rosh Chodesh is not on the 29th, that is, not on the 30th, but instead it has to be on the 31st. Have to make, the Rosh Chodesh on the following day. Okay. Now how about another possibility? Rahu Bezdin Bilvat. What if only the Bezdin saw it and there were no witnesses who came in order to say that they saw the new moon? So in that case, what does the Mishnah say? It says, Yamdu Shnayim V'yoidim if they have. So two members of the Besdin will get up, and they will give testimony in the presence of the other members of the Besdin. The Yomru, and then the members of the Besdin will say, Mekudosh, Mekudosh, right? It's sanctified. Now, what happens if Ra'u HaShlosha V'Hein Bezdin? What if three saw it, right? Not two this time, but three, and they happen to be the Bezdin. What do you do in that particular case? So it says, Yamdu HaShnayim, that two of them stand up, but V'Yoshivim HaChavereihim Eitzel HaYochid. But they have to add two other people to the Bezdin and seat him next to the one who was not the one who was called to remain as a dayan and not to serve as a witness. And then these two of the three, the Yo'idu Bifnehem, right, They have to give the testimony before them. The Yomer Mekudesh Mekudesh. And they will say the month is sanctified. Why? Why do they have to go through this procedure? The answer is, says the Mishnah, is because She'ein Hayochid Ne'mon Al Yedei Atzmo. Because the single individual is not trusted by himself. In other words, we need an official proclamation on the part of the Beis Din. Now, as we see, there are different cases that are mentioned over here, and now the Gemara is going to analyze each case and see why does it say this and why doesn't it say something else. Okay?
Well, why? I don't understand. Three people saw the moon.
There's three people, and they are the Beis Din.
All right.
Okay.
Why do we need two more Eidos?
No. Two of them are going to serve as witnesses, but that leaves only one. But one cannot proclaim that, you know, it's the new moon. So therefore, they have to add two more to make a Beis Din of threes, and then they can proclaim that it is Mekudesh.
It makes sense.
Right.
Perfect sense. I mean, it's a conflict. You can't have a person be a witness and a judge.
That's exactly the principle.
And what they're doing
but
is... Ain't
eight, well,
you
not said
alternate
right.
jurors.
Right.
You can't
right.
draw the
right.
witness.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
One judge is not a Beis Din of three. Sure, it's not a valid Beis Din. You need three, at least.
Yeah, you should have three. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, we'll discuss each of these things as we go along, phrase by phrase. Okay. Gemara wants to know, it says, Loma li l'mista, why do I have to learn in the Mishnah, Ra'u Beis Din l'chol Yisrael? You know, that the Beis Din in all Israel saw it, literally. Of course, it means, you know, loads of Jews, right, saw it. Okay. What is the reason for that? I mean, wouldn't it be enough, for example, to say, Ra'uhu Beis Din, that the Beis Din saw it? Okay, so let them proclaim, right? So it says, Itzarich. It says, I need it. I need that phrase in the Mishnah. Why? Salkadate Chamino, that's what that abbreviation means. Maybe you might be thinking that Ho'il v'Ra'uhu Beis Din v'chol Yisrael, inasmuch as the Beis Din and everybody else has seen it, if Parsim Allah, then in that particular case, we say that it's known to everybody, publicity has gone out, you know, concerning it to everyone, they all know about it, below the Abrucho, and since everybody saw it, then they should not have to make Rosh Chodesh on the following day instead of this day.
Right.
Right? Of course, remember, under what circumstances we're talking about, it's already night. Okay? But everybody saw it. So why did I have to leave it over? So Kamash Malan, therefore we learn that it doesn't work that way. That if the Beis Din did not have the opportunity yet to declare that it is new moon, to say Mekudosh, Mekudosh, on that particular case, it has to go to the next night. Okay, so that's one reason.
I mean, that's a rule, not a
rule. That's a rule, right. Okay?
No,
it requires means was passed.
So it's a passive. Me'ubar. Me'ubar,
yeah.
Me'ubar
is passed on. Okay.
Yes, correct. I mean, it's, you know, you're aware of the fact that what we call present participles in Hebrew are not only verbs, but they're also, they could serve as adjectives, yeah, and they can also serve as nouns even. Okay? If I would say, for example, let's say, Hayotzeim ha'nichnasim, all right? So it means those who go out and those who enter and so on. And this is, these are two present participles, but yet, as you see, that they're using they're people, okay? Right? So they're people and they're verbs at the same time, and they're present participles. So you see that it all works together, okay? Now, the ubar is, of course, the pu'al form, which is a passive form, from the word le'aber, which would be the active. Le'aber means to make pregnant, right? The newborn means literally that it is pregnant, okay? Of course, in other words, carries over another full day, okay? So that's the meaning of the word in this particular case. But of course, you know, this is why we talk about ibur shana, right? Which means that you declare that this is a leap year, right? And we call such a year, as for example this year, is a Shana Mu'uberet, right? It's literally a pregnant year because it has that extra month. Okay.
Where does
fuller.
That get from?
Okay.
That's my question, not to delay things, but where did it, because the Aberet's year, where do they get from Mu'ubar?
Yeah.
That it becomes like goes to fruition or something. Where do they get from that it goes to the next day? Instead of saying, well, it was the first day.
Oh, because. No, the answer is because the technical term for having it over, that having it begin the next day instead, this is the term, Mu'ubar, right, this is the term that they use. It's a technical term. Right, yeah. Okay, so far the first...
Yes. It also means to step over if you go across the river.
No,
that's Yeah, well, there are many, Lavor and so on. Right. I mean, it's all the same route, but, you know, it all depends on what way you're using it, that's all. Right. No, not really. I mean, the idea is still there, in essence. But, of course, as you change from a Kal to a PL, you put in a different meaning into it. Okay. And the same thing is true if you put it into a Hifil and so on and so forth. This is the beauty of the Hebrew language, that you can take the same root and then make it into many things. Okay. Nah. All you have to do is to sit and learn. Right. Okay, now the Gemara continues, and it says, the Kavan, and inasmuch, the Tanalei Rahuhu Best of the Chol Yisrael, and that, all right, since we say that, the Bezdin, and everybody else saw it. So, Nechkeroha, Edim Lamalisa, why do we have to question witnesses? Everybody saw it already. So, we have to have witnesses come in also and testify, and you have to ask them questions. Did you see it? What shape did it look like? How high was it? And so, remember all the questions that we had in the previous chapter, right? So, it says, Hachiko Omar. So, we have to interpret it as follows. Inami, right? Likewise, Nekiru Ha'edim, if the witnesses were, if the witnesses, you know, were examined, they were questioned, Velo Hispiku Lomar Mekudosh Asher Hashecha, right? And we see that there wasn't time enough for the Bezdin to say that it was Mekudosh until it was already dark, so I raise a Mubar, so this is the rule, right? The cave on the Tano. Ad shechashecha hareze meubar lomeli. All right. Now, inasmuch as the Mishnah again said until it's that lasted until it's dark, and it becomes meubar, then lomeli lemisniye. So why do I have to even learn chakiras ha'edim klal? You have to question witnesses at all. So he says, "Itzarech, I need it. Why do I need it? Sal kodat dechamina. You might think what." Let's say they began questioning the witnesses while it was still daytime, right? And this is the techilas din. This is the beginning of the court procedure, right? Or mekudosh, and then the fact that they say sanctified. This is kikmar din. This is like the conclusion of the same. Trial, the same case that was started during the day, right? For the Kachibalila, and then in that case, why can't they say that Mekudosh is that very night and say that water goes to the day that preceded the evening, right? So therefore, they don't have to do what? They don't have to then carry over and say Rosh Chodesh is the following day, right?
Right.
Midei Rahava, which is analogous. Adine Momenos to cases that involve monetary whatever it involves the monetary type of cases. Okay, in the Gemara and the Sanhedrin we have different types of trials that are mentioned or different types of cases that are mentioned. Okay, one of them we call, one category we call Dine Momenos. Dine Momenos means anything that has to deal with monetary affairs. In other words, Chaim and Yonkel are arguing with each other or a loan or a piece of property or whatever it may be. Alright, so these have to be decided of course by the Bezdin, and This is one category. I'll come back to this in 1 second. Okay. Another major category is what we call dinei nefashas, which means these are cases where the punishment might result in a death penalty. Okay? So, obviously, dinei momonos and dinei nefashas have different types of laws concerning what the procedure is, the size of the court, and everything else. Now, one of the major problems that we have, that is one of the major differences that we have between dinei momonos and dinei nefashos, we'll mention some others as well as we go along, but one of the major differences is the fact that dinei momonos, you can start the procedure during the day because all trials must begin during the day. Trials must begin during the day. Don't begin the trial at night, okay? You have to begin during the day. But if the, as we say, the discussions, the shakla, the tarya, to use the Hebrew expression, Aramaic, okay, that, you know, the give and the take of the discussion in the court, okay, if it goes over until the evening, the Bezdin and Dinei Momonos is permitted to make a decision at night. In Dinei Nefashos, where capital punishment is involved, there the Gemara in Sanhedrin says very specifically that you started during the day, but at night you do not do anything. Instead, you have to sit and you have to think about, you know, what it's all about, and then the following day, then the trial is continued until a vote is taken. And there'll be another principle that I'll mention in just a moment. All right, but let's get back to our text for a moment. Okay. So, they're saying, why, look, here is a case that the Besdin has to proclaim the fact that it's new moon, right? Beginning of a new month. Certainly this is not anything that is like what did in the Foshas, right? It has nothing to do with cases that would involve the death penalty. Not at all. But what is it analogous to? This is the Bita de Hava, right? What is it analogous to? The answer is it's analogous to Dinei Momonos, right? So if that's the case, the Tanan, you know, just as we learned in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, as I said, Dinei Momonos Donin Bayom, that in the case of trials, you know, involving monetary affairs, they begin the judgment during the day. The Gomrin Balayla, and they're permitted to complete it at night, that very same night. Of course, naturally they can come to a conclusion during the day, it's not messy enough, but still, the point is that they can still carry it over and make a decision at night. So, Hachinami, so likewise they say, Mekachim Balayla, right? So why can't the Besdin say the same thing? They heard the witnesses. When were the witnesses interrogated? During, while it was still daytime. So the fact that in the meantime, that by the time that the judges got together in order to proclaim, you know, that it's the beginning of a new month, that it's night, but this is the same thing as in the case of Dinei Momonos. In other words, why shouldn't they be able to declare at night that, you know, the 30th day was actually Rosh Chodesh? Not make it necessary to have an additional day to leave it over. So they say, Tomash Malam. That's why we learned the Mishnah, to tell us that that's not so. That in other words, the law concerning the Besdin that makes the decision about the month is not guided by the same rules as a court that deals, you know, with monetary affairs. Okay? V'yema hachinami. So why can't I say it should be the same thing as Dinei Momonos? So Omar Kror, so they cite the Pasuk. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, of course we're familiar with it if we daven. This is part of the Thursday morning psalm that we recite every week, okay? Tichok liYisrael hu, that, you know, the this is a law. Remember what precedes it. It says, Tiku b'chodesh shofar, right? Blow the shofar on the new moon. Bakesel yom chageinu. On the festival in which, as we translated it, that the moon is covered over. I mean, there may be other ways of translating it, but this is how the Gemara looks upon it, okay? Tichok liYisrael hu, because this is a statute for the people of Israel. Mishpat Elohi Yaakov, this is a judgment or justice being carried out, if you wish, right, by the God of Jacob. So Emas HaVechok, when does it actually become a chok, a decree, you understand? In other words, when is the final decision finally made? The answer is Bigmar Din, right? This represents the actual moment when the case is finally settled, right? Right. So, in other words, Bekudosh, this is the time which is the Gemar Din, but the Kokhore Lei Rachmono, but at the same time, in the same Pasuk, the Torah refers to this particular business of the new moon as being Mishpat, right? So Ma Mishpat Bayom, so just as Mishpat has to be during the day, so Avhochi Nami Bayom, so likewise too, the proclamation has to be when it is day. And if the proclamation is when it's day, then it means, you know, that if they did not have time because it was already night, then in that particular case, automatically it's going to be Be'ubar. Yes.
I have a question.
Yeah.
This is very logical, but as we can see, it's rigid. How is it that they have the same, this philosophy, very juxtaposed to what we learned a few pages back, where the Beit Din would be somewhat liberal, maybe to a very extreme point, in tweaking the testimony of witnesses as to when the moon was seen or was not seen in order to get the Hagim on the proper day.
That's
they
right.
would tweak the Rosh.
But that was the answer.
Yet here, they're right. being very machmir. We would
okay,
use the
right.
same machmir.
Rather yeah, I understand what you're saying, right. No, but that's exactly what we learned. We learned that normally the Beis Din didn't tweak witnesses, okay. But where they felt that there was a good reason to do it in order to avoid, as for example, to have Yom Kippur occur on a Sunday or on a Friday, then in that particular case they would try to influence the testimony of the witnesses so that it wouldn't work out that Rosh Chodesh would therefore occur on a day when Yom Kippur following it is going to be on one of these days. Okay. So that was an emergency. It wasn't done every single time. Okay. This is correct that with our custom is not to pronounce, you know, to have Rosh Chodesh mentioned before Tishrei. We don't. We do it before every other month of the year that we have, you know, we recite the Yehi Ratzon, and, you know, Rosh Chodesh so-and-so will be on this day and so on, right? We don't do it before Tishrei. Why don't we do it before Tishrei? Because, as we learned, normally, how many days are there in the month of Elul? The answer is 29. As it said, you know, from the time of Shem Tzadik, it never happened, and so on and so forth, you know, that there was anything other than 29 days, okay? So that being the case, this is why we don't do it. Okay. Another sort of like an ancillary reason that's being given is that other months may need a proclamation in order to tell people, you know, when it is, right? But with Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, you know, people normally know when it's Rosh Hashanah because there's plenty of publicity that is being given. Right. Yeah, well, if you know when it's Rosh Hashanah, as I say, then you count 29 days for Elul, and then the 30th day is automatically the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. Okay. I said that there were various differences between Dinei Nefoshes and Dinei Momonos. Okay, and one of that we cited is, you know, when does judgment take place in the case of Dinei Momonos, when it could be at that very same night following the day of when the trial started, whereas in the case of Dinei Nefoshes, the law is that you must leave it over until the following day, unless on the first day they saw already that the testimony was running to such an extent that they were going to free the person, then in that case they could declare that the person is innocent and free him. Okay. But if there's a possibility that the punishment will be the death penalty, then in that particular case they must not rush to judgment. They have to let it stay over and think and again re-examine the arguments and the testimony and everything else before they can come to a vote and a decision. Also, Gemara, will also answer, incidentally, that we'll see that you cannot have what we call a Beis Din Shakul. In other words, you cannot have a court where you have only an even number of judges, so that when it comes to voting, they'll be split 50-50. You cannot have that. Why? Because you have to have, for a decision, a majority. Now, normally, a majority means one. But in case of Dini Nefoshes, you need at least two, but since you don't have a Beis Din Shakul, you would have to have at least three more votes, you see, for those who are ready to convict as compared to those who are ready to acquit. Whereas with acquitting, a simple majority would be enough. We're always trying to see if we can free the person from the death penalty. This is a tradition that we have.
Okay. Well, if they hold it over for an extra day, aren't they cutting into the following month?
Oh, that you're talking again about over here. No, listen, we're used to having 2 days for Shredish, so we have 2 days for Shredish. As I told you, anyway, the phases on the moon are such that we have. He again quote the Mishnah, which says, "Ruv Bezdin Yam Dushnaim Yodu Bifneihem." Right, the next part of the Mishnah says that if the Bezdin actually saw it, then what? Then two of the members get up and they testify in the presence of the other members of the Bezdin. Okay, so now they introduce a different question. They say, "V'amai Lo Tehei Shmiya Gedola Mireiyo." Why are you setting a principle that says what? That hearing is more important than seeing. What do I mean by hearing and what do I mean by seeing? The Beis Din saw the moon. All right, so they saw it. Why then should it be necessary to do what? That they have to take two of their members so that they should testify as witnesses so that the Beis Din could hear the testimony. Why do they have to hear the testimony? Right. So I'm a Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Zeira said, okay, Kigon Sharuha Balayla. Alright, let's take the case that maybe they saw it at night, and in that case, what would happen? Then they still would not be able to do what? To proclaim the Kurdish Bukhurish on the following day.
You see them
right.
Anyway.
Yeah. Alright. But it's an interesting thing. I mean, why should, Shmiya, in other words, to hear something, be more important than seeing it? I mean, if you have to listen to the radio, that's more important than actually seeing it in the newsreel or something like that. So it's a question. Rohu Shlosha, then of course the Mishnah said, and what if three saw it? The Hain Bezdin, and they are the Bezdin, the three of them. So Yamdu Shnayim, Yoshu Mechavarehim, Esal Yochid. Right? So the Mishnah said that two of them get up in order to serve as witnesses, and let them take from some of the other who are there in the court, and obviously it means from other people who are qualified to serve as judges, but just that they weren't asked, right? And like you mentioned before, a juror pool, okay?
The Sanhedrin.
So Sanhedrin mentions, and the Gemara again, Sanhedrin mentions that that in addition to having the judges who were there, but they also had Talmidim or Chaverim, and so in other words, learned people who were there sitting in the audience. Right, and if necessary, then they would add from them. Okay, so this is what he's suggesting. So let them add and make them into a Beis Din. Okay, so it says, Amai Hocho Nomi. Why? It says, maybe here too, Neymar, we should also say, Lota Hishmir Gedola Beriyo, that getting, verbal testimony should not be more important than visual, seeing it, right? V'chi temor, and if you say, as the argument was before, hachinami kigon shu balayla, they saw it at night, as Rabbi Zera said in the previous sentence, says, ha'inu hach, It's the same story. So they say, no, I have to take a look at more what's written. He says, Sefer Itzimichalei. I need to continue with the Mishnah, where it says further on, the Ein HaYochid Ne'emunayidei Atzmo, that one cannot be considered worthy, I don't want to say trustworthy, but you know, so that this would be a closer translation, right? One judge alone should not be considered worthy enough, you know, to make this proclamation on his own authority. The Sal Kodate Chamino, because maybe you might argue as follows. Hawil, inasmuch, Tanya, that we learned the Brisa in again in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, and it says over there, Dine Mominos Bishlosha, that when it comes to monetary cases, you need three judges, but the Im Hoya Mumchel Rabim, if the judge was considered a Mumchel Rabim, Mumche means that he's been certified, that he has like a special certification that he's considered qualified, and this qualification is accepted by the Rabim, in other words, by the majority, by everybody, that he is a most highly qualified person, right? Then don afilu biyochid. So in that type of a case, then he's permitted to give judgment even as only an individual judge. So hochinami. So why can't we say over here to nikatshe biyachidi? So why can't we say okay? So one judge will be qualified enough to say mikudish mikudish, right? That the month is sanctified. So Kamash Malon, this is why the Mishnah specifies specifically that it ain't so, that you need a court of three to proclaim that Mekurish Mekurish, that the month is the new month. V'yeimor, and let me say, Hochidami, in this particular case, Ein Lecha Mumcha L'Rabim Yisrael Yosem Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, I can give you an example to say, who was the greatest, most qualified teacher in Israel? It was Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The Ka'amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and yet what did Rabbeinu Shel Olam say unto him? He said to him, Ad Ikari Behadoch, hey, you're not qualified yet. You know, we go back to that 12th chapter in the book of Shmos, you know, where it says, HaKadosh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodesh, but it begins by Yidamir Hashem El Moshe V'El Aharon V'Eretz Mitzrayim Limon, right? That the God spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt saying, HaChodesh HaZanachem Rosh Chodesh. This is it. This is what the new moon looks like, okay? So, he told Moshe Rabbeinu, you could be Moshe Rabbeinu, but he's still not qualified, I mean, to go and proclaim that it's Rosh Chodesh until Aaron is standing there with you. Dichsiv, as the pasuk says, "Vayomer Moshe Aaron, the Eretz Mitzrayim Lemor, Achodesh Hazeh Lachem." All right. So Lemeimro. So maybe we should say what the aid Naaseh Dayon, that the person who sees can also serve at the same time as a judge, because after all, in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, right, he and Aaron witnessed the new month, right, and yet they also served as the head of the Bez Din to tell the people of Israel what? That it is now Rosh Chodesh. So it would seem to imply then that an aid, that a witness could also be a Dayan, he could also be a judge. So, hey, they say, no, he says, Lemo, you mean to say that, for example, Nasnis in the Lok of Rabbi Akiva, that our Mishnah is not in accordance with what Rabbi Akiva said, the Tanya. As we have learned, it says Sanhedrin Shero Echot Shohorag Es HaNefesh. If the Sanhedrin saw a person who murdered another person, okay, here we are, we continue. You have the next one? Wait, yeah, you have it, okay, Arthur. Very good. All right, we'll be in suspense for a moment. Continued. It's like these Thursday night
serials.
PBS, right, serials, you know. Right, okay. So, what should the court do in that particular case? So he says, Miksasa Nasu Eidim, Miksasa Nasu Dayan. Some of them become witnesses, and some of them become judges. Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. This is Rabbi Tarfon's opinion. All right? Rabbi Akiva, however, Omer, he says, Kula Nasinadim, says the entire Sanhedrin, they become witnesses. The Ein Eid Nasin Dayon, and no witness can at the same time serve as a judge. Cannot be. Either you're a witness or you're a judge, but a witness cannot be a judge. So, Afilu Teimo Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara concludes by saying, okay, you may agree with Rabbi Akiva, Ad Kan Lekoma Rabbi Akiva, Hosam Elamidin Nefoshos. Right. Why did Rabbi Akiva state what he stated? It was in connection with laws that involved, as we said, where capital punishment could be involved, okay? So in that particular case, the Rachman Omar, because the Torah itself stresses what? And yes, and the verses v'shoftu ho'edo v'hitzilu ho'edo. The edo in this particular case literally means the congregation, but it doesn't mean that over here. It means the court. The court is to judge v'hitzilu ho'edo, and the court is also to save. V'hitzilu ho'edo is horetzeach, right? Is to save the murderer. Actually, there it happens to be in connection, if you recall, with the Orei Miklot, you know, which we'll be reading about in a couple of weeks, okay?
What?
Huh? Well, a few more weeks when we come to, you know, Matze, you know, and when we read that, and it's not that far off already, so that's when we read about it, okay? So, in that connection, the judges are commanded that they ought to try to save. To save what? To save a person from capital punishment, if they can find sufficient reason to do so. Which, and I remember I mentioned before this evening, you know, earlier this evening, that, for example, a simple majority cannot convict a person, make him liable to the death penalty. You need more than a simple majority in order to do it, and then the law about, you know, they cannot convict the same day that they hear, even if the evidence is so clear when they hear it during the day, they still are not allowed to make a decision on the day. It has to be carried over to the following day, so give them a chance to think. Maybe there are circumstances that they could decide, you know, in favor of the person who is accused. Okay? So, in this particular case, Kevin the Chaz Yuhu, the Kotal Nafsho, Le Matsu Chosel Ezechusa. This is what the Gemara is saying in reference to what Rabbi Akiva says. Namely, if the members of the Sanhedrin saw that this man committed murder, then they cannot find any justification for him. And they are commanded to try to find justification. Okay? Try to find schus, some kind of merit for him. Aval hocha, but in the case of proclaiming the new moon, it says, I feel Rabbi Akiva would, Rabbi Akiva too, would be happy that what? That you could take, you know, from the Beis Din and some of them, right, let them do it, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I see that it's already time. Okay, so Mirtz Hashem, next week we'll start with the new Mishnah that we have on Chof Vav. As I said, here we go into, you know, we begin the shofar. Okay, right. Okay, tonight is the 19th, right, of July, and we are now on Chav Vav, Rosh Hashanah, Chav Vav, Omid Aleph, okay, and we start with the Mishnah on the page. All right, yes. Now, until now, of course, the major discussion was about how the Beis Din, and as I'm talking now to the last, you know, the second chapter that we finished, and the previous Mishnah, beginning of the of this particular chapter, that the discussion has been about how do we determine when is the new moon, and of course we see that it's very important for determining the proper date also for when Rosh Hashanah should be observed. Okay, now that they have finished that, now they go back again to what do you have to do in order to observe Rosh Hashanah. Now in the Torah, the major mitzvah that is unusual about Rosh Hashanah is the fact that it requires the blowing of the shofar. says Yom Teruah Yehalachem. This was to be a day of Teruah, which in other words of the sounding of the shofar and so on, right? And this is the mitzvah, you know, which is different for Rosh Hashanah as compared to when? As compared to any Shabbos or any holiday. If you tell me, you know, that, for example, this coming Shabbos we'll be reading in Parsha, at the end of Parsha Pinchas, you read about all the musafim, all the additional sacrifices, which follow the Parshas HaTomin. Parshas HaTomin is Shabbos B'nai Yisrael Ma'adayim, it's called Nilach B'nai Yishai. That's the daily sacrifice that was offered up in the Beis HaMikdash in the morning and in the afternoon, right? And then after that you have the additional sacrifices for Shabbos, so Yom HaShabbos was the Nation of Tamimim, right? Then you have followed by Rosh HaShechem on Rosh Chodesh, what is the additional sacrifices that you have? And then after that you have following it you know, for Pesach and Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot, okay? So these all have different numbers of sacrifices, but nevertheless they all have what in common is the fact that they do have a sacrifice which is an addition to the daily sacrifice. And of course with every sacrifice there is also a mincha, in other words a meal offering as well, okay? And then of course Ketores, you have the burning of incense every morning and every afternoon in connection also with the service. Okay, so but blowing of the shofar is the special mitzvah for Rosh Hashanah, as we know. So that therefore, now the question is, what is a valid shofar? This is what the Mishnah wants to know. It says, "Kol ha-shofar is kosher." It says, every shofar is kosher, is valid, chutz mishel parah. Except for what? Except if you try to make a shofar out of a cow or bull's horn.
Cow
or bull, bull horn. Well, yeah, they use the word cow over yeah. here, but obviously it would apply to a bull just as well. Maybe even more to a bull. Okay. Mipnei shehu keren, because that is referred to as a keren, as a horn. It's not called a shofar, but it is called a keren. All right.
What's a keren?
Keren means horn. This
horn.
Case. Right. It has a million meanings depending upon the context, but here it means horn specifically.
Push it to horn.
Right. So Omar Rabbi Yossi, objects, and he says, hey, not so, he says, Valo kol ha-shofaros nikru keren. Aren't all the shofars also referred to as a keren? Shenemar, as we find, for example, in the book of Joshua, where the sentence says, b'shoch b'keren ha-yovel, at the time when you blow the horn of the yovel. Okay, now yovel over here doesn't mean jubilee, but it means the ram's horn, okay? Because the word yovel, as we'll see in our text tonight, also can refer to a ram. Okay? So, according to Rabbi Yose, well, you see the word keren in connection with the ram's horn, so that would mean then, according to Rabbi Yose, that any keren, such as that of a cow or bull, is also valid. Okay. Changers, of course, disagree with him. So now, the Gemara begins and says, Shabri Koma Rabbi Yossi, right? You know, it says Rabbi Yossi gives a good argument. He has a good posik, right, in order to prove the fact that a shofar can also be called a keren.
Yeah.
Okay. The Rabbonim, now about the rabbis who object to the use of a cow's horn, right? Says, Kol ha-shofaros ikru shofar. He says, no. Whenever we use the word shofar, then that's a shofar. Everybody knows that a shofar is a shofar. Right? It's called a shofar. The Yikru Karen, and yeah, it can also be called Karen. But the Fara, when it comes to that of a cow or bull, right? Slash bull, whatever you want, right? So it says Karen Ikre. Yes, the word Karen is used in that connection, but shofar lo Ikre. But the word shofar is not used when it comes to a cow's horn. Dichsiv, and now they base it on a pasuk. Okay. And what is the pasuk? You know, don't forget, when you have a pasuk, very often the pasuk is sort of, you give a little abyssal adre, you know, in order to try to make it fit.
Right.
Every shofar, right. Every shofar can be called a keren, but not every keren can be called a shofar, exactly. Right.
I thought that in order to be a shofar, it's going to be a ransom.
Yeah. Technically, it should be, of course. I mean, this is why it says your veil, which is a reference to a ram. Okay? It's also the word that we use for jubilee. But why? Because the jubilee year, again, had a mitzvah of blowing a shofar in order to indicate that this was the moment, you know, when the jubilee year began. Okay? All right. So, what is the pasuk that they base it on? It says, all right, we have a pasuk in, you know, Vezos HaBrocha, where it says, Bechor Shoro Hodorlo, which means literally, the firstborn of his ox is beautiful unto him, the karne re'em kanov, and he also has the horns of a wild beast. Trouble is, okay, trouble that we have over here is what? That first of all, you have to give them some Islam kvetch, you know, in order to be able to see. All right. Who is he referring to, first of all, over here? The answer is, he's referring to Yosef. This is the blessing given to Yosef, where it says, you know, that Yosef proved preeminent, and therefore, Bechor, Sholo, right? He's like a bull, so to speak, an ox. And Bechor, Sholo implies, you know, the strongest type of an ox, and you know, he's able to subdue his enemies. This is actually, if we read it, you know, a little further on, we see that it says, "Bahemia Abim Yenagach Ach Yenagach Yatov Amasiyos." In other words, that they can conquer all the enemies, even to the very ends of the earth. Okay, so at any rate, in the pasuk we have the word Shor, right? What is Shor? Shor is an ox, correct? And then, what word do we find in connection with this in the same pasuk? It says the karne re'em karnov, right? So maybe re'em we should translate as a wild ox over here, okay? And it has what? It has keren. It has horns, okay? So in other words, we see then that what? That the word, that the word, you know, for an ox is what? It's sure, right? But I mean, how do they refer to those things that stick out from the head? The answer is called a keren. Okay, all right. So that's the point that they're making when they said what? When the sages said that shofars can be called keren, but not every keren is a shofar. Specifically, what keren is not a shofar? The answer is that of a cow or a bull. Exactly, okay? That's how they derive it. For Rabbi Yossi, yeah, so back comes Rabbi Yossi with his arguments. He says, Omar Lecho, he'll argue as follows. He says, the Paraname Ikre Shofar. What do you mean, he says? I can find you a pasuk where it refers to a cow, and nevertheless, its horn is referred to as a shofar. Dichsiv, as we find the pasuk, this is in Tilim, where it's written with Sitav Lad Hashem Shofar, that the prayers that we offer will be as good unto the Lord, right, as fitting or as pleasing unto the Lord, even more than Shor Por. Okay? Now, Shor means as we'll see in a second. Shor means an ox, and Por also means a bull. But in reality, our sages in the Talmud make a distinction between these. Okay? Point is that we have, for example, a pasuk which says, Shor or Kesev ki yivoneh, right? Whether it's an ox or a goat which is born, so you're not allowed, you know, to if it's the firstborn, it belongs to the Kohen, right? Not allowed to work it, etc., etc. Okay, so there, Shor is seems to be a young one, okay? Par, it could be also, you know, at a later stage or something like that. Actually, they have different words in the Gemara that, you know, within the first year of life, it's called this. Within the next year of life, it's called that. Okay? So, in other words, what they're trying to say is that Shor and Par are not the same exactly in meaning, because each represents a different stage in the development, in the age of the animal. It makes a difference, incidentally, as far as sacrifices are concerned, because in certain things, the Torah will say par, right? It may say par ben bokor, okay? It may say shor. Shor echod, ayel echod, and so on and so forth, or par ben bokor echod, etc., etc., and so on. They all represent different ages, actually. Okay. Well, the horns appear in any case, right. Granted, I mean, the older the animal, probably is more developed, although I'm not an expert on cows and bulls, you know. Okay. But at any rate, they're saying, Rabbi Yossi is saying, look, says, right, the sitam of the Shem Mishar Par, right? So, and imshor lama par being par lama shor, he asked the question, if it is a shor, so why does it say par? The impar lama shor, why does it say shor? So the answer is elamai. So what? So he says shor par me shor par. Okay, in other words, if you combine the words shor and par, right, just drop that r in the middle, and what do we have? We have show far. Okay. So he says, you see, I got a pasuk also to show you that shor par also gives us the word shofar. The rabbanon. So, back again to the rabbi. So it's like playing tennis, you know. This one hits over the net and the other one hits over the net. In return, right? Okay. So, for rabbanon. So that they go back in. How are they going to answer Rabbi Yossi's argument this time? So they answer it, Kinnarav Matna, even as Rav Matna taught. The Omar Rav Matna, as Rav Matna said, my shor por. What do we mean by shor por? Why does the Pasuk mention that? So he says, Shehu, so he says, you know, yeah, he says, why my shore? This is the way I really should read it, the right. What do we mean by the word shore in that passage? He says, that's a par shehu gadol kefar. In other words, this happened to be a very unusual kind of an ox that the Dovid HaMelech was talking about in the Tehillim, right? And he says that even though it was a shore, in other words, a younger ox, or a younger bull, whatever you want to call him, but it was Shehu Godol Kefar. It was as big as a par. So, in other words, according to the sages, so they also have a drash for the pasuk, but not the same drash that Rabbi Yose gave, where he found the word shofar in the combination of shor par. Yeah. They use it for a different drash, that's all. This happens very, very frequently, you know. If you have the same pasuk, but this one uses it for this purpose, and this one uses the pasuk for a different purpose. Because each of them, you know, have their own point of view, and even though the verse may be the same, but each one can understand the verse in a different way. Ula Amar, Ula said the following. He says, Hainu Talmud the Rabbanon, Kidarat Chista. He says, the real reason that the rabbis said what they did, that they don't want to use what? They don't want to use the horn of an ox, right? They don't say that that's valid as a shofar. The real reason for that, he says, is even as Rav Chista remarked, get the Rav Chista, the Omer Rav Chista, because what did Rav Chista say? He said, "Bipnei ma, for what reason? Ein koin godol nichnos bevigdei zahor b'fnei b'fnim, la'avod avodoh. Why doesn't the high priest enter into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur wearing his golden garments in order to perform the service that he had to perform over there. Okay, what service did the Kohen Gadol have to perform? It's Naivel et Nim, in other words, in the Holy of Holies, which is the only time during the year in which he ever entered it, right? The answer is he had to bring in to burn Ketoris over there. He had to burn Ketoris. Okay, incense he had to burn over there. And when he was in there, he also prayed on behalf of the people of Israel for forgiveness. Okay? So, the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur wore two different sets of garments. One set of garments had threads of gold in it, and the other set of garments was just plain linen. Just plain linen, okay? Without any embroidery whatsoever. So, for certain things, he had to wear the golden vestments, okay? But when he entered the Holy of Holies, at that particular time, the Kohen Gadol could wear only the plain linen garments. So they ask, why, according to Rav Chisda, why is it that this is so? Why couldn't he go in wearing the golden garments into the Beis HaMikdash, since he was wearing it anyway for other aspects of the Yom Kippur service? And he gives the following answer, very famous answer. He says, the thief, for the reason that She'ein Kategor Nase Sanegor, that the Kategor, in other words, the one who denounces, the prosecutor, if you wish, cannot become a Sanegor, a defender of the people of Israel. In other words, Kategor, who is the Kategor? Satan, right? Okay. The Satan has arguments. People of Israel were praying for forgiveness for their sins, and naturally, what does the Satan bring up before the Rebbe Shalom? Why should you forgive their sins? Look, they sinned here, they sinned there, and so on. And particularly, what is the sin he's referring to over here? It's the sin of the golden calf. Gold, gold, gold. They were blinded by gold in order to serve the golden calf, right? So that, therefore, when the Kohen Gadol comes in to serve as the Sanegor, in other words, as the defense attorney, so to speak, as the pleader on behalf of the people of Israel, he should not be wearing garments that contain that gold, which when Rabbeinu Shalom sees it, he'll remember a very bad incident that happened in Jewish history with gold. So, this is the reason why.
Is there any mention of the plain white?
Yeah, well, plain white represents, you know, purity, right, exactly, right.
White, you know.
Yeah, but it represents purity in the sense, you know, if you're wearing a pure linen garment, right.
It's specifically
the white. Yeah, yeah, pure linen, exactly, okay. And, of course, if you remember, white is a verse in the book of Isaiah, the very first chapter over there. It's written over there, Im yu chatoichem kashonim, even if your sins are as red as scarlet, right? Kasheleg yalpidu, they shall become as white as the snow. In other words, the snow, the whiteness represents the forgiveness for the sins, right? Returning from tumah, in other words, returning from impurity to purity. Okay? So this is the reason why when he enters the Holy of Holies, he wears only the plain, simple garments without the gold. Okay. So, how does this refer, of course, to what we're learning right now? The answer is very simple. Why don't we use a horn of
a cow,
a bull, right? Because of the golden calf. It'll be a reminder, so that therefore we don't use it, okay? So now the Gemara says, what do you mean? That ein kateger naset sadeh, right? I can give you other cases where it should be so. Below, no. Beho ikor dampar, look. First of all, what is the act that indicates the atonement that they sin, you know, the sacrifice? The answer is that they sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeah, okay? Then if you refer, you know, to example of Korban, you see whether it's on all four corners or on two opposite corners or what it is and so on and so forth, okay? So, at any rate, here is a par, an ox, right? Members of the same family that the golden calf came from, right? And yet, atonement is affected by taking the blood of it and sprinkling on it. So isn't this a violation of Ein Kategor Nases Adegor, right? So he says no, because he says Hoel V'Ishtane Ishtane. No, it's different. It's not the bull, and it's not something to remind you of the bull. It's simply blood, and blood is blood. Okay, so it's different already. So that wouldn't enter it. So they say, okay, all right. Give you another argument, they say. Right? Don't we have certain things that are actually part of the sanctuary, right? They were in the Mishkan. They were also in the Beis HaMikdash. What are they? So he mentions three of them. There is the Aron, in other words, the Ark, in which, of course, the Ten Commandments were kept, right? The Ark of the Covenant. There was the Kaporis, that's the special cover that covered the Ark, right? And the Churuv. And then you had the cherubim on top of this, okay? Now, in all of them, what was the material used in order to make them? The answer is that they all had gold in them. And still, there they were in the Mishkan. There they were in the Beis HaMikdash, right?
Yeah.
So, how do you justify that? Isn't that also a violation of Ein Kategor Nases Adegor? So, he says, no. Chote Bayakriv Kami, right? We say that the person who is sinning, or the sinner, is not drawing near, which means that these things were actually not within where? Not within the Holy of Holies, but they were just outside. Okay. So they say, okay, how about some things that I can prove to you they were in the Holy of Holies? The kaf is the golden spoon that Aaron had to carry. He had to use in order to take the incense out of the machtot. The machtot is the incense burner, right? And they had gold in them. So, and where did he use them? They used them on Yom Kippur, right in the Holy of Holies. So doesn't that defeat your argument? So they give a different reason. They say Chote Bayisnoe. It says a sinner should not adorn himself. In other words, in this particular case, don't flaunt the fact that this is gold, because it's more important as to what was the purpose of it. Common, right? So even though they were in the Holy of Holies, but nevertheless they were serving a different purpose, so that it wouldn't apply. So they say, how about the golden vestments, mibachutz? You know, so which the golden, you know, the Kohen Gadol still had to wear golden vestments when he performed service on Yom Kippur. So isn't that still a violation of Ein Kategor Nases Adegor? Isn't that applicable? So he says, that was Mivachutz, so he wore them outside. In other words, not in the Holy of Holies, but Mivnin. I mean, we're talking about what's exactly inside the Holy of Holies. And he didn't wear those golden garments. So they say, all right. You say, okay, it's all right if it's outside the Holy of Holies, but not right if it is
inside
the Holy of Holies, right? So he says, shofar. Or what about shofar? He says, namim bachutzu. After all, when do they blow the shofar? They don't blow it within the Holy of Holies, but they blow it outside, right? So therefore, what would be so bad, you know, about using, in other words, the horn
from a cow?
From a cow? It says, Kevon and Zikorin who Yevnindome. It says, inasmuch as the blowing of the shofar is to remind, remember, it says Zichron Trua, right? Which means that the shofar itself sounds as a reminder to the Rebbeinu Shalom, so to speak. Also sounds as a reminder to us, you know. But to the Rebbeinu Shalom too. It's a sign, you know, that we Jews are fulfilling a commandment and that we want to do tshuva, you know, for our misdeeds, right? For the things that we've done aboard. So it says, inasmuch as it is, you know, in order to remind us, so therefore, kibifnin dori, then it's as if it were within the Holy of Holies itself. Therefore, again, the horn of a cow shouldn't be there in order not to remind the Rebbeinu Shalom about the sins that the people of Israel committed, particularly the sin of the golden calf. Okay. So he says, Vahotana, but didn't we learn that the sages said not to use the you know, a cow's horn, right? Mibneshu Karen, because it's a Karen, right? So the answer is, yeah. Ko'amachado v'yot ko'amachado. Yeah. In other words, actually, they mention one reason, and then they mention another reason. What are the two different reasons why not to use a cow's horn? De'ein kategor nasas hanegor. That's reason number one. Right? That you cannot have the one, you know, the person who reminds Israel of all the sins that they committed and denounces Israel cannot be the defender of Israel. The old, and likewise, another reason of Neshu Karen, because it is a Karen and it is not a shofar. All right, those are the reasons of the sages.
Prayer on every night.
What?
It uses the same phrase.
I mean, Kategor, yeah, sure. Right. In other words, hush the silence the kategor, you know, Satan wants to accuse the people of Israel, and instead, you know, accept the sanegar, you know, the defender of Israel in this place. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, so, okay, now, God's fine, so the rabbis have two good reasons why they say don't use a cow's horn. It's not a shofar, and also it reminds the Rebbeinu Shalom of the sin of the golden calf. The Rabbi Yosei, so coming back to Rabbi Yosei, who says, hey, the cow's horn is also kosher, is valid for a shofar, right? Omalacho, he'll argue as follows. The Ka'amrit ain't kateganasis aneger. Well, you're arguing with me that ain't kateganasis aneger. Says, I agree with you only that what? Hane milmifnim, right? Where it applies actually within the Holy of Holies. Then that's not right. But the high shofar, then the shofar is mibachutsu. They're blowing it outside, not blowing it in the Holy of Holies. Udiko Amrit, and let's get back to the next argument, right? If they shoo Karen, right? If you argue with me that the cow's horn is a Karen and it's not a shofar, I say that what I said before, call her shofar or snomiyikru Karen, right? I maintain that every shofar is also referred to as a Karen. Abaye Omar, Abaye comes along with a somewhat different reason. He says, Hainu Tamay Rabbonon, the reason that the rabbis say that you must have a shofar and not a Karen, not a you know, cow's horn, because shofar Omar Chamona, right? The Tovar says that we have to blow a shofar. And he says, "Velo shnayim mishlosha shofaros," and you don't blow two or three shofars. Okay. So now the question is, what does he mean exactly by that? So what we have to say is, what he means is that when you blow shofar, it has to be only the one shofar, and a cut cannot be made of a shofar, which is, let's say, stick a shofar inside a shofar inside another shofar. And that way make a shofar. Understand?
Are they talking about, you know, for example, the tears?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's got different
souls. That's
one,
right.
It's not one, it's not.
You're right, three, four, right. That's exactly what he's saying, right. He says, well, hot is horror, but in the case of the cow, he says, caven the kai gildi gildi, inasmuch as it's one layer upon another layer, exactly what you said, right? So, mitchazek ish daim ish toshi shofars. It looks like two or three different shofars, okay?
Either that,
yeah.
Or the other thing might be the some horns are solid.
Right.
You know,
a
ram's horn is not solid.
Yeah, of course. I mean, in order to make a ram's horn into a shofar, you know, that requires work. You have to be able to sweep out and everything else. And
you would have to work on it.
Right. Right. As I say over here, it's the first reason that you gave. I mean, that this is what he feels, right? Now it says, Otanu Ibneshu Karen, and the fact, you know, they say that it is a Karen, Ko Omar Chada. So Rabbi Yosef is actually giving two different reasons to justify his point of view. Right? First of all, Chada, the shofar Echad. Okay, Omar Rahman. Okay, Belosh Naim, Belosh Shofar. Sorry. The old Bimneshu who Karen. All right. Well, it all depends. So we can refer this to the rabbis too, frankly, to their point of view. He says. So, in other words, we can say that. What is the objection again? The objection is that first of all, a cow's horn is made like two, three different layers. So we reject it for that reason. And secondly, because it is called Karen, it's always referred to as a Karen. It's never referred to as a shofar. No, that's the rabbi's opinion. Now, for Rabbi Yossi, so back he comes again, and Omar Lachloi says, look, Nikam et shofar echod, Omar Rachmona v'lo shtayim v'shloshe shofar rose, you say, your argument is that the word shofar means one, and not two or three shofars. Says, kevin dem chabri adododi chadhu, says, look, nevertheless, the fact that they all join into one, so